Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Broadway Podcast Network presents Giants in the Sky, how Sondheim and Lapine went into the woods with me, Ben Rimmelauer. Today's guest, Colleen Fitzpatrick, Broadway understudy.
Once upon a time,
Colleen Fitzpatrick was a replacement understudy to the roles of Florinda, Lucinda, and the Baker's Wife in the original Broadway production of Into the Woods. She understudied all the female roles in the original Broadway cast of Stephen Sondheim and James Lapine's Passion, eventually taking over as the mistress. And her many other Sondheim credits include Anyone Can Whistle at Carnegie Hall, the Roundabout Theater Company revivals of Company and Sunday in the Park with George, the Public Theater's New York premiere of Roadshow, the Kennedy Center and Broadway revival of Follies, and the City Center Encore's production of Merrily We Roll Along. Her other Broadway credits include Cats, Jerome Robbins Broadway, Lestat, 110 in the Shade, Bye Bye Birdie, and Kimberly Akimbo, in which she stands by for Victoria Clark in the title role. I've been wanting to meet you for so many years. I think I told you that I grew up in L.A., and some of my friends that were performers had studied with Arthur Joseph, and he used to talk to me and them about you, and and it was right when you were in Passion, so we were all like, oh my god, she's so
wow. Cool. That takes me back, let me tell
yeah.
you.
Yeah,
but I'm so old now, anything takes me really far back.
I feel you. But I didn't realize at the time that Passion was not, I mean, you've done so many Sondheim shows now at this point, but it was not the first Sondheim show that you did. And yep. I was very excited to realize that Into the Woods. Well, Into the Woods was the first one you did on Broadway. I don't know. Maybe you did other. I guess I would love to know your whole kind of journey with Sondheim. Were you like a Sondheim nerd growing up? Like, how did it get started?
Not at all. You know, I'm from Lancaster, Ohio, grew up extremely poor, and I learned how to sing. My mother loved music, and so we always had music during our dinners. And I learned how to sing by singing along with Julie Andrews on all of her records of the musicals that she did. Mm. And, you know, Marnie Nixon and all that. That's how I started to sing. And I've had such, my whole life is Mr. Toad's Wild Ride. I kind of became professional at the age of 16, because I didn't have a college scholarship. My mom entered me in the Miss Teenage America pageant, and I had just finished playing Eliza Doolittle in the high school play, and I won the whole thing. And that's kind of got me on the path to school at SC, and then, you know, one thing led to another. I was in a rock and roll band for many years, pretty famous out west. And then I eventually made it back to Broadway when I was 28 and stood in line to, I wanted to be on Broadway. I always did want to be on Broadway, but my path took me other ways first. And I stood in line at the Majestic Theater to understudy Betty Buckley in Cats. That's how I started.
Wow.
And because it was 3 months, I think, when they had opened, and Janet Hubert was leaving, who was her original understudy, and I got it. So I did that, and then I left that, and then
were you in the company otherwise playing another cat when you weren't on for Grisabella?
Oh babe, I'm not a dancer, although I've done dance shows. I don't know why. I think because I make them laugh. But no, I was one of the four lead understudies that sat up there above the Coke sign overlooking the orchestra, and we sang every single group number because the dancers were out there killing themselves. Wow. On that great stage. Yeah. And so I left, and then my first show that I auditioned for for Steve and Paul Gemignani, and they are really responsible for most of my career, was the original company of Sunday in the Park with George. And I had been asked to come in as Celeste number one. And even though I had grown up singing soprano, I just been belting for 2 years, and I came in and they took me all around the world. Steve, you know, never came to any auditions except the final callbacks. Steve wasn't there. Paul was like going, having me go up a minor third and then down a fourth and then this, you know, like he always did. And I didn't get it. And I was devastated because Celeste number one is a high soprano. I left. And my really great voice teacher, Dee Markwood, who in New York for many years, was an opera singer. And she and I was devastated because I wanted to work with Steve so bad. Mm. And she said, I know how we're going to get you the first show. We're going to teach you how to sing Mozart. And that's exactly what she did. Wow. We studied Mozart arias because the tessitura, Steve does the same thing. You know, his recitative lines or even in Into the Woods, which was my first show, is way up there, just repeated little notes, you know, all that. Mm. So I got to audition for Into the Woods, and I made it all the way to the final callback. And all I had to sing for my final callback was Into the Woods, Into the Woods, Into the Woods, and Out of the Woods, and Before Dark. That's all I sang, and I got the job because that's very Mozartian.
Yeah. God, no one has pointed that out to me before. That's so interesting.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And my teacher really, and still to this day, and, you know, I do think I'm the only person that's done like, I don't know, over 10 things with Steve. You know, I'm people know who I am, I guess, in the business, but I'm no star. But I have worked with Steve probably more than anybody else has.
Let's go through them. I mean, I want to do a deep dive on Into the Woods, but so you did Into the Woods on Broadway, Passion on Broadway, then the road.
Let me go back. I also went out on the road toward the end of the last 6 months, and played the stepsister and then covered the Baker's Wife on the original road tour.
Oh, how cool.
Okay, yeah. Yeah. And then I did, Passion. See, I even forget them all. I did Passion. I did Follies. I did Roadshow.
The Follies you did was the revival at the Marquee, right?
Yes, but we Kennedy started Center. At the Kennedy Center, right. Marquee. Then Bernadette didn't go with us to LA, and that's when Vicki Clark stepped in.
Right.
At the end of that.
Vicki Clark, and, who you're heroically standing by for now on Broadway in Kimberly Akimbo. Yeah.
Yes. And I've had the great fortune to go on. I think I'm up to like 28 or 29.
Wow. Months. Oh, that's so great.
Oh, I'm so thrilled.
I told you, my friends from San Francisco said that you were absolutely fabulous. They were so happy they got to see you.
Thank you for passing that on to me. Because those kind of comments from our fans, you know, just the fact that they love the show and that I've been able to touch them in some way is so important to me. I love the show more than life. But
oh, yeah.
I can't even remember all I've done with Steve, and I've done multiple concerts for him.
Also did the revival of Sunday in the Park, right?
I sure did. Yeah. From the Chocolate Factory. Yep.
Oh, with Evers Sam Bunchrock.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Brilliant production.
Such oh my God. Incredible was production. That beautiful. Oh my God. And I love that first production, the original production on Broadway.
Of course.
But the fact the projections just changed the story in such a way because it absolutely made it, you saw the creation of it. I mean, totally. I loved it. That first black brush stroke in the first song. I think when we first saw it in text, we all sat there and gasped.
I bet.
Yeah, it was incredible. Truly incredible, remarkable.
So, okay, going back, you bring your Mozartian training to singing the, you know, everyone talks about it like it's like a Disney song, that opening number of Into the Woods, but it's like Mozart. I love that. And so you got to stop.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's interesting because, you know, and I'm going to, pardon me, stop me if I start talking around in circles, but a lot of Steve's recitative, it, like I said, is very Mozartian in the sense that it really does hang on a tessitura, whether it's a man or a woman, a lot of the times. And I am, I'll admit it, I'm very, very Catholic in my taste about how people sing Sondheim, because I've done so much work with he and Gemignani, who is a stickler, because Paul started as a drummer first. And so he's extremely rhythmic. And both he and Stephen did not like people to sing the material being overly sentimental. There's always sentiment when a song is well done, but they don't like sentimentality. And frankly, me neither. And, you know, get on and off the notes cleanly. Don't oversing it. Don't hold over the bars. Sing it exactly like it's written. And Richard Adler was the one that taught me that, because I worked with Richard Adler so many times in my career as well, is he would constantly say, if you sing the punctuation to the punctuation and pay attention to exactly what's written note-wise, the composer and the lyricist that are really great give you the clues exactly what you need to know.
Well,
and that's the acting itself.
A legitimate musical background where you have the skill to do that. I think probably a lot of people working in musical theater can barely even read, you know, Every Good Boy Does Fine. So I think that, you know, it's a huge advantage that you bring to the table, you know, that you're able to look at that and read it as if the same way you read the script, you know.
But let me tell you this, Ben, and I really believe this for any of your young listeners out there. And I say this all the time. You have to do your research, whoever you're doing or you're working with, or not only the text, but the music, and you have to look back. That's where the gold is, not melismas and how you want to sing it yourself. Part of that's your responsibility. Part of that is the musical director's responsibility and the composers themselves. And it's interesting that you bring that up, because Janine Tesori, who is the composer of our show,
Kimberly
Akimbo, she talks in the same, we just had a rehearsal with her. She talks in the same way that Steve and Paul Gemignani talks. You can't just blast through a number. There are right angles to it. You have, and she says the same thing, sing it exactly like it's written.
Yeah.
Get off the note, stop the end of the bar, dot, 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 because you lose all meaning of the piece if you don't. And I'm a stickler for that, man. I'm totally Catholic about that.
Now, when you talk about the tessitura, I understood that to mean the vocal range of the role. Is that what do you mean by he writes?
Well, it's that's the way my teacher described it. You know, if I'm singing Lerner and Lowe, you know, it's very legato and it's very smooth and it's moving around in a very easy manner. The intervals are easy, but Steve, it's very tightly written. You know, he was a mathematical person. Music is math anyway. I'm probably talking out my butt, but it was very mathematical the way, and I'll just take Into the Woods is done.
Yeah, please.
And it starts, and by the way, to take a left turn myself, the first downbeat is bam, 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 bam. And it's a metronome and everybody better get on.
Yeah.
At that tempi, or you've ruined the piece. It is a metronome from the beginning, immediately in that whatever, however long that number is, and what the stepsisters sing is la da da da, into the woods, ba 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 be, ba 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 ba, ba da ba 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 ba. You know, and it should be that clean. It's not legato. It's not, and you've got to be able to negotiate those tight kind of intervals. And weirdly enough, Into the Woods, Into the Woods, Into the Woods, and Out of the Woods, and Home Before Dark is one of the hardest ones, because your mouth wants to do too much and then you're behind. And it literally is. It is, singing is, in my opinion, and what my teacher taught me, and she was an opera teacher, singing is talking on pitch. That's it.
I mean, that's a funny thing to hear coming from someone with a legitimate soprano voice that, you know, seems pretty far from how most of us talk, you know.
But it is, you know, and you and And believe me, you know, I've belted for people. With Steve, I only sang soprano. This piece is very contemporary, Kimberly. Yeah. And so I'm all over the place. But everything is connected through my passaggio and everything because of the way I was taught. And my teacher believed that there's only one voice, whether you're singing low, middle, or high. And it just moves straight up the scale. We're getting in the weeds now, Ben.
Yeah, no, I'm fascinated. Okay, but so let's go back just so you do this training and it works. You get the job. So was this after the show had already been open for a bit?
Yes. And, you know, I never think linearly, but when Lauren Mitchell, who's been a dear friend of mine for, you know, since the show, when she left, they actually put out calls to replace her. And I went in then, whenever Lauren left, I don't know, it might have been a year into it. Because I was in the show for over a year.
Yeah.
And I made it down to the final callback, as I said. And I was so freaking nervous. And I walked out, you know, and Steve was sitting in the dark. And I didn't know he was sitting there, thank God, in the dark. And he said, Hey, because I sang my own piece first. He said, what note was that? Because I used the same belt song, mix song for 28, 30 years. And I said, everything I want. I said, it was a mixed F. He goes, very, very impressive. It's from a failed show called I Had a Ball.
Oh,
and Karen Morrow made the song famous. Yeah. And Larry Moss.
Around a mixed voice F, right?
Yeah. Well, that's where I live. You know, that's why I did, you know, because Betty's memory note is an E flat. I mix in our show. I don't have to flip up into a soprano. And I'm, you know, wailing on that Our Disease song like crazy.
Well, when Sondheim was very impressive, he was probably equally impressed by your voice and your knowledge of obscure musical theater.
Maybe. I got that show because Larry Moss, the great acting coach of Hilary Swank and many, many other people, he started as a musical theater coach with a class in New York City. And Larry was my coach for many years. Mm. And Larry was the one that gave me that song because he had studied, here's for your young kids in the audience, if there are any, Daniel Craig, which has one of the best books ever on auditioning.
Mm. David Craig.
David Craig, excuse me. Did I say Daniel? Oh, yeah, not James Bond. David Craig. And it is a genius book about how to act a song.
Yes. Yeah. So, okay. So that was your own piece and you impressed Sondheim. And then what happened?
And then that same audition, I sang the Into the Woods thing and I went home and waited. And interestingly enough, I didn't get the show immediately. And I went, wait, what happened? And there was another girl, and I'm not going to name her, who James wanted instead of me because he was looking for somebody who could really cover The Baker's Wife, even though the girl was going to cover both step sisters.
Mm-hmm.
And when I got home, we got a call from Joanna Merlin's office, the great casting director ever. Yeah. And she called my agent and said, listen, we love Colleen. Just sit tight. Just sit tight. It's not going to happen right away.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened within 2 weeks, obviously they didn't like what this other girl was doing and they hired me as well. And the other girl barely, I think she went on once. Mm-hmm. And I did 2 weeks. I was supposed to replace Lauren when I went in.
Mm-hmm.
And Terry Burrell, who was the understudy, really wanted to move up. And they did move her up. I think that was the right decision.
Yeah.
But when I finished my 2 weeks, Ben, of rehearsal, the stage manager came to me and said, hey, tomorrow's your last day of rehearsal, and you're going to be on for 14 days as Florinda. And I went, what?
Wow.
It was crazy. All the understudies
were constantly. It was Kay McClellan's role because you had gone in to replace Lauren Mitchell as Lucinda, and now you're playing Florinda. Got you.
Yes. And so when they hired me, I was contracted to play, you know, to understudy all three, The Baker's Wife, Florinda, and Lucinda. Because Terry moved up instead of them putting me in the role.
Who else was in the show at this time when you went in? Like, was this when Nancy Dussault was the witch?
Nancy was further. Was Nancy my last witch? See, I get confused. The only person at that time that had really left was Bernadette.
Hmm.
And was Joanna still there? I think she was there, but it could have been Cynthia was in there. Cynthia Sykes by then. Yes. I don't know. But they all came back, the two that had left, because we then filmed.
Right.
Filmed it. And every single person of the original cast. But really, I think to the end of the show, most of us stayed. Most of the original cast stayed to the bitter end, because why would you leave a show like that?
Yeah.
Shows with content are rare and becoming rarer still.
Yeah. Well, you've done a lot of them.
I have. It's my forte.
You don't have a dumb resume, Colleen.
No, I don't. It's kind of weird. It's kind of weird. That's why I'm so poor. You know, I've never really had a long running show for 20 years or something where I could have with Cats, but it was killing me. I had to get out.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know what? I think you've had an enviable run.
Thank you so much. So, I've done some pretty interesting things.
You know, people are always asking me if I'm on Ozempic, and let me tell you, I do not mind them asking me that, but I'm not on Ozempic. They especially ask me that when they see me eating dessert or desserts or all the crap I eat when I'm out. But my secret is that when I'm home, when I'm by myself, I'm eating Factor. Factor sends me restaurant quality meals that are ready to heat and eat whenever I am. No prepping, no cooking, no cleanup except for like my fork. And now you can enjoy Factor meals too. Go to factormeals.com/giantsinthesky50 and use code giantsinthesky50 to get 50% off. That's code giantsinthesky50 at factormeals.com/giantsinthesky50 to get 50% off.
The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on Essie Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
So you said you stayed through the end of the run.
I sure did.
So then is that when you joined the tour after the Broadway closing?
Yeah. Yeah, there was a break. There was a little break. I can't remember what I did. I should have had my whole resume here and I could have told you. But then I was married as well at the time. And so they just eventually called me and said, hey, do you want to do the last 6 months of the tour? The tour made a tremendous amount of money for them, the original tour.
Wow.
Because they didn't make money on Broadway.
Right.
You never do with a Sondheim show. That's not why you do them, you know?
Yeah.
And then the tour just made them a ton of money.
Yeah.
People came out all over the country, mm-hmm. all over the country. It was amazing. And weirdly, you know, back then, you know, yeah. as in all first run Sondheim shows, the first time they're done, people never get the second act.
No.
in these Sondheim Lapine shows.
Mm-hmm.
And the second act for me is my favorite act.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's just.
Was that harder on the road playing the second act?
Pardon me?
Was it harder to feel that the audience was connecting with the second act on the road compared to on Broadway?
No. The, you know, with Steve's shows, people are listening so hard, you really can't tell. Because now we have all this experience with his work.
Yeah.
But the first time they come out, and not to divert from Into the Woods, oh my God. And I'm going to say that was one of the most thrilling casts I've ever had the opportunity to observe and to work with, because I went on a lot.
Yeah.
And it was my first show. So they blew my mind. But, you know, it's always a privilege and a terror to do Steve's work the first time, because, you know, they are extremely challenging for the actor, but also the audience. And back then, Into the Woods was a real challenge, you know, for people. Now it's like, oh God, let's do it. And every high school does it. So it's part of the canon of musical theater, not even just of Steve's shows, of musical theater. So people go, oh yeah, I know that show. Yeah, let's go see that. But back then, you know, it's it, the concept of it, it takes a radical turn in act two, you know? And for me, if I wasn't on, and all of us understudies went on a tremendous amount, I don't know why that was, but we did, all of us, every single one of us, we had a, like a, you know, parents use a marker for how tall their children get. We had a, we had a wall that we ticked off every time any of us were on. And all the understudies, every role was like double covered in that show. Had to be, you know.
Were you the first cover for The Baker's Wife?
No, Kay was. Then I was second,
Did you wind up going on in that role?
Oh, yeah. And I loved doing it.
I mean,
just doing any of Steve's work is such a privilege. It's an education about how you pull everything that you can into your work, because it's there for you, and to mine it and everything. It was, and yet we had a lot of fun. I mean, you know, people were naughty on stage and Into the Woods. I specifically remember, and the hydraulics of the hill slope, you know, would break occasionally. And I remember Kay, I was with her, I was doing Lucinda and she was doing Florinda, and we tripsied across the stage on one midnight cross, and at some point in the show, and there was a croissant that fell onto the floor from under her ball gown. You know, I mean, they're, you know, typical, you know, and those costumes, those female costumes for the mother and the girls.
Yeah.
Oh my God, they were like so heavy. That was back in the day when you had massive budgets to create gorgeous costumes. And we had like footballs, stuffings in each sleeve, and then on the panniers and in the butt. And it was just so, so heavy. We weren't allowed to sit down in those Duchess satin gowns. We would make an exit, let's say stage left, and our dressers would be standing there. Because you couldn't pass around this in the back of the stage there. We had to go underneath the stage to cross from stage right to stage left. And our dressers would undress us down to the pantaloons, the corsets and the shirts. And we would cross underneath the stage in our underclothing, costume underclothing. And then the gowns would be put on the other side of the stage.
But how did the gown get there?
Well, our dressers would carry them down.
Well, that's really like being, you know, a lady of the court in those days.
Oh, my God. Yeah, it was crazy. But it was a relief on a certain level, because at least if we weren't on, we could take them off and not sit on a chair, but rest on a stool or something like that.
Yeah. I mean, even just to go up and down the stairs, it must have been a huge difference.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. Tremendous. I don't even know how much they weighed, but it had to be over 38 pounds. They were because it was Duchess satin. And then the big crinoline underneath with whale bones and this and that and the other.
Now, let me ask you a technical question about the music for the stepsisters, especially as someone who was covering both roles. Like, it seems to my, you know, ignorant ear that they're singing in unison a lot, but is it actually in harmony? And is that tricky to, when you go on in one role, remember which part you're singing?
It isn't, because, you know, you just drill and drill and drill and drill. The hardest thing for me that I recall when the mother is twisting Florinda's hair and her head, and then Lucinda has to laugh, but it's a musical laugh, but the There was nobody that could do it like Lauren Mitchell. I mean, I would struggle to do that, but it was Lauren Mitchell, who is one of the smartest people I know and one of the kindest people I know. And she's now a big, big time producer for many, many years.
Rogers, yeah.
She just had a command of style. And also quick. You know, everybody that Steve, every time I'm backing up a little bit. Every time I audition for another Steve Sondheim show / Paul Gemignani's show, I'd see the same people. It was almost like it was kind of a rep company because we all sang on and off the notes like Steve liked. That's just all there was to it, whether you were male or female.
Right.
Now, all this that I'm saying is my opinion, but I mean, it is borne out by we saw the same people over and over and over again. And depending on the show, you might work with those people twice, like Tom Aldridge, who I adored. I did Into the Woods and Passion with Tom. I what an actor and a consummate gentleman. And just, oh my God, he was just incredible. And many others, you know, so I'd see them a lot, you know, and that, and it was, it made it like a family in a weird way.
Yeah.
You know, as a matter of fact, when I did Into the Woods, and if I wasn't on, every single night, I would go down to the first leg of stage right and get as close as I could to the downstage side of the leg. And I would just like right out of the light, and I would watch Tom and Chip do No More, which to me is the best number in the entire piece for me.
Yeah, I couldn't see
it's
that.
It's so simple, but it is so profound. And their both of their acting, they were never the same. And yet it was so deep for them. I was so impressed as a young actor. I think I was 30 then. I just couldn't believe what I was witnessing.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah.
It just tears me up every time I hear it. Huge fan.
Speaking of this repertory company, so I mean, you mentioned Tom. I know that Maren Mazzie had taken over in Into the Woods as Rapunzel. Yes. And then, of course, you know, her great splash in Passion, where she was so, you know, irreplaceable, singular.
I covered her in Passion. You know, I was on stage as the mistress and the maid, and I covered she and Donna.
Wow.
As Bosca. I was covering them both.
Wow.
I had understudy rehearsals twice a week every week.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, it was fun. I learned a lot on that show, too.
So tell me more about the understudies in Into the Woods. So, I mean, you essentially had that speak. I mean, that's like a mini repertory company within the repertory.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Right.
You know, I'm just thinking back. I mean, geez, and I'm going to forget people. My dear friend to this day, Jeff Blumenkrantz, who covered 5 roles. And if somebody tells him, he's going to go, no, I didn't go on that much. But I swear to God, he went on over 100 times, something crazy. Yeah. Because he covered everybody in the show practically. Mm-hmm. And we had, what was her last name? Cindy, I can't remember her last name because a lot of these people I've never seen again. Mm-hmm. Myself, Jennifer Chatfield. Oh my God, I can't even remember them all. I can't. But it was, there were like 5 or 6 of us. I mean, let's not forget, we're talking about 1984, 1985, something like that.
89, yeah.
Yeah, it's a long time ago.
And you were doing the full show on stage twice a week for understudy rehearsals?
You mean with Passion? Yes.
No, and Into the Woods.
No, just once.
Once a week.
And I'd rotate. Yeah, and I'd rotate.
And you'd rotate in your roles.
Yeah. That's right.
But was there enough different covers that you could, if you played Florinda, who played Lucinda?
It would be Jennifer.
Jennifer.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you played the baker's wife, who played the stepsisters?
We would have one stepsister. I mean, but that's no different. That's no different with any show. I mean, even in Kimberly Akimbo, when we're doing understudy rehearsal, we hardly ever have a full cast. And the only time is when they bring in vacation covers and they, when they're putting them in and they'll do it. But yeah, we're bouncing all over the place. And that was typical. You know?
Sure. I mean, I think Into the Woods is just striking because it's such a vivid ensemble cast. We all know, you know, there aren't that many musicals like Into the Woods where so many of us could name all the characters and probably sing all their parts. You know?
Right. And isn't it terrible? I can't tell you the name of all the understudies. I'm sure you know.
Decades
but
later.
I don't.
Decades later. But
decades later.
And then so when replacements would come into the cast, for example, when Nancy Dussault came in, since she was not the witch when you started.
Correct.
Would she have those understudy rehearsals as part of her sort of process to gear up toward getting on
stage?
Well,
it would be called it. Well, no. What they do is they have put-ins for people, you know, with the whole cast.
Right.
In lights. And Nancy is also a friend of mine. Such a pro.
Yeah.
I thought she was hilarious as the witch.
Heard you that. Know,
Betsy Jocelyn, we went through Betsy as the witch.
Oh, yeah.
First for Nancy. Mm. And oh my God, who was the other one? Who
Ellen
was the
Foley.
Ellen Foley was my witch at one point.
And Felicia Rashad right after Bernadette.
Yeah. And so we went through a ton of witches.
Yeah.
ton of witches.
And then Betsy again on the road.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And she was great. She was great. Very different from Bernadette, but you know, Bernadette, you know, there's nobody like Bernadette. Yeah. And really we only had, I believe I'm correct, other than Joanna Gleason, then we went to Cynthia Sykes.
Yeah.
And then I think Kate took over.
I think Mary Gordon Murray did it for a minute in between.
For a minute because she went to the tour.
Right. Right.
I mean, it was a hot second.
Yeah.
And then Kay really took over for it.
Yeah. Yeah. I would have loved to have seen her. I'm sure she was wonderful.
Yeah. She's not even in the business anymore.
See, you know, sometimes great artists, great souls, they don't want to stick around.
They want to get married and have children. I believe that's what she did. She's down south.
Well, that's great too. She probably did. And I'm still so fascinated by the stuff you said about the Mozart and the Tessitura. I wonder if you have other kind of like musical musings about Sondheim. I would love to hear anything you've got to say.
Well, I just think that, you know, and I know this is about Into the Woods.
Yeah.
But so many of his pieces are almost like recitative, right?
Right.
And a big aria.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, and he always gives his leading ladies huge arias, you know, whether it's Mrs. Lovett making her meat pies at the introduction to that, Fosca, I read.
Yeah.
And even that is I da 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 dum da dee da 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 dum da dee da 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 dum. You know, all those crazy intervals that I almost kind of remember it.
Yeah.
But it has to be sung extremely accurately, as if you're doing recitative from an opera, in my opinion, because that's the way I learned how to be a better singer.
Mm-hmm.
And at my advanced age, I still sound extremely young. I can say that I'm playing a 16-year-old now. And the reason is because of the precise nature of how you're singing. So you don't stress your chops and your larynx and your little, you know, vocal folds are vibrating at what? Something like 1,000 times a second or something crazy. They get degraded. And so you want to stay within the framework of what Steve has written. And the more accurately you can sing it, whether you're a male, look at Buddy's numbers in Follies.
Yeah.
Holy crap. You know, it's just it is talking on pitch.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times Steve will put music for a character like the Step Scissors way high because that's the voice he has for them. That is the character's voice he's decided to use for them. And so they're always up there, you know, and he has a range for each character, and you have to really honor that and really, you know, like I said, be accurate.
Well, that must make it hard to find somebody that can cover multiple roles. I mean, if the stepsisters are up high and then the baker's wife is like more of an alto range, I mean, you know, that.
Well, let me tell you the interesting thing about that, because, you know, every show except Follies, because it was a Kennedy Center production originally, and they spared no expense. You'll never see another Follies like that, because the Kennedy Center had like buckets of money.
Yeah.
And that's why it was beautiful and all that. I mean, it's just physically gorgeous. And we had that monster orchestra. But every show and concert that I did, no, I take that back. Paul didn't do roadshow either at the Public. But most of my work was with Paul Gemignani. And Paul Gemignani, when he would audition people, and I think this is one of the reasons that Steve's shows were cast so well, and you could sing multiple areas of your voice well. And this is a famous story, but it's absolutely true. Paul, when he would audition people, grades the singers. You're shaking. Oh yeah, you'd never heard that. Oh yeah. From A to F. F being failed.
Yeah.
And I thought it was ingenious, but it was made his auditions really scarier than hell, because you would be singing what you came in with, your own number, and then you'd be singing stuff from the show, and then he'd say, hey, can you sing Happy Birthday? And I'd say, what? And then he'd look at Paul Ford or whoever, Mark Mitchell, and say, and can you put that in the key of whatever? And then you'd sing a little bit, and then he'd go, okay, take it up a fifth. Okay, now down a minor third. Now can you go up a sixth? Now, and all over the place, because, and let me tell you something, and that's why I did not get the original Sunday.
Yeah.
He is looking for your weakness.
Wow. Wow.
But that's a very smart thing to do, because Gemignani is a brilliant musician. I adore him to this day. I still keep in touch with him. And he was extremely demanding. I mean, he either liked your sound or he didn't like your sound, you know? Mm-hmm. And fortunately for me, he liked my sound, and Steve liked my sound. And you can see in those original companies, there were certain actor singers, no offense to those actors, that have never, ever, and would have never done a show with Steve and Paul.
Mm-hmm.
Their voices just weren't something that they used.
Yeah.
No offense.
Yeah. I'm curious, you know, I'd just love to know, like, what are the Sondheim songs that you like to sing most in your voice?
Oh, my God.
I know that's a weird question. You just made me want to know.
I don't even know how to answer that, because my mind, I think when I think of Sondheim music, you know, I'd love to, literally, I know I'm old now, but I would love to do Desiree. And I think I would be able to do Desiree. Mm. I love her music.
Yeah.
I think when I was doing Passion, it was such a joy to sing Fosca's opening number.
Mm.
Because it's so deep. It's just so deep. And for me, the number in the bedroom, which they took out so much dialogue in that scene when Fosca is asking Giorgio to write the letter, and you miss, because they took it out, but the Victorians really were fascinated by death, even in Europe. And people would cut off the braids of dead people and save the hair and stuff. But she asked him to write the letter. And that section in there, that I think part of the lyric is, a love as pure as breath, as permanent as death, implacable as stone.
Yeah.
A love that like a knife has cut into a life I wanted left alone. There is nobody on the planet that could have ever written those lyrics.
That's for sure.
And it's absolutely reductive. It's, the bars are perfect for the sound, for the sentence that is, or the phrases that he wrote and the idea that he wrote. And it's a freaking miracle.
Yeah.
Into the Woods, I think really, I just sing along. I still put on his albums all the time and just see what I feel, you know, about what I know now as I've gotten older and I listen to these lyrics and because of my life experience, what I know, what I've gathered. And I still, again, no more. No one is alone, you know, things like that. They're just finishing the hat, you know, all of that stuff. I wish I could be George, you know. I mean, there's so many things that you would just want to play. And of course, Sally oh, in Follow.
Sally, because now you whet my appetite. I'm so, you know, I think about Finishing the Hat as such a hard, rangy song.
Yeah.
And I've heard some women sing it in a lower key, you know, so that it's more of like a kind of belter number. But I'm very curious where you would choose to sing it.
Oh, I would sing it in the original key.
Oh,
and,
I want
you know, that. I mean, of course I would. Hell yeah, man. But it would be the key to that. It has to be light, you know, and Mandy was just such a master at like just on and off note so lightly. Just ding, 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 like a little bing, 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 like a mallet, tiny little mallet on and off the note.
Yeah.
And I love that. You know, I love that accuracy when I hear singers with his songs. I don't like any heavy-handed treatment by singers of his material because that's not what he wrote.
Yeah. Okay, then I cut you off because I just had to know the answer to that. So then you were moving on to Sally and Follies.
Sally's, yeah. I mean, you know, she's just such a great character. I would love to play her. For me, just to hear the original Company and the great, dead too early, Dorothy Collins sing "The Sun Comes Up, I Think About You." It's her phrasing. Her phrasing is perfection. It's right in the pocket of what he wrote that is so mind-blowing. I, you know, and by the way, you can even see her do it on some variety show on YouTube. And I occasionally watch it and go, man, perfection. Perfect. She's barely doing anything.
Really?
And you understand exactly where that woman is at.
Mm-hmm.
And that's her. And that's also Steve's writing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was just, wow. That's all I can say.
Yeah.
I've had a lot of great experiences. Into the Woods is very dear to me because it was my first introduction to him.
Yeah.
You know, and set me on a path really for the rest of my career.
Yeah, clearly.
You know, and it's not even about my career, but what I was able to learn at the seat of, honestly, and I say it without any ridiculous, like, of the seat of these greats, Steve.
Yeah.
Jonathan Tunick, even more so than Jonathan, for me, was Paul Gemignani, who was such a voice of his pieces.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A great partner for actors and singers in the pit who could really save you, help you, have it breath. You know, nowadays, I think, as a matter of fact, I know this is true because my musical director told me, Kimberly Akimbo is the only musical on Broadway today that does not have an orchestra that's using a click track.
Wow.
And click tracks for me are the death of any breath in music and true feeling. It's just a steady click. And, you know, that for me, I can't help it. You know, everything sounds so similar.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I'm of that other generation, you know,
right.
I mean, literally, I'm of another generation of musical actors and singers. you know?
Well, I love knowing that there's a full circleness to it. And, you know, in the way you've described your experience and the musical, musical world of Kimberly Akimbo. And certainly, you know, those artists that you're working with, I mean, you talk about doing Follies with Vicki Clarke, and obviously Janine Tesori, like many composers, is very much in the school of Stephen Sondheim, and, you know, would be the first, I'm sure, to trace so much of her inspiration from his work.
That I don't know, but I mean, I'm so lucky to work with her on this piece, which I think is just incredible work by she and David Lindsay of Bear. Yeah. And I had worked with Janine before, and that's where I met her and Chris Fenwick, because I did Mother Courage with Meryl Streep at the Public.
Right. In the park.
Delacorte. Yeah. Which was another astonishing experience because of the cast, but also the material and who was working on this thing.
Yeah.
And
that was George Wolf. Janine, right.
George Wolf and Tony Kushner was right. He did the adaptation.
God's sake, yeah.
It was crazy. But Janine literally took the actors that George hired, and of course she was in the room, and she wrote the score while we were rehearsing.
Wow.
That was wild. But she's like I said, she is a stickler like Stephen. And really, if I could say anything to musical theater singers, it would be to sing it as it's written. And that does not tie you down. That actually gives you more freedom. Swear to God.
Thing. That makes intuitive sense to me, but explain how that plays out, that it gives you.
Well, I think that, you know, when your focus, and this is my opinion and it's my own training, when your focus is on yourself and how loud you're going to sing or how big your note's going to be or how long you can hold it or whatever, even if that's just in the back of your mind, it takes you away from what the composer intended. And when you really think about the job of a singer actor, your focus is on what they wrote. You are communicating to the audience what their intentions were in their writing. And I am a big, big believer in that. Janine was talking about something very similar in our rehearsal. Because when you do that, your work actually becomes more defined by yourself and the composer. You're working in tandem with the composer, whether he's dead or he's alive, and gender, it could be she or he. You're in tandem with them. You are a partner with them, and you are communicating what they want you to communicate. And when you know that, to me, you're on solid ground. And then you have even more time within a bar or a line to make the composer's point, not your point. It's not about you, the composer's point. And there's so much freedom in that about how you're going to express that within the parameters that you've been given.
That's so well said. Thank you.
I mean, and I really believe that even if you're singing a very quick recitative type song, then you go, wow, that's not that fast. I got all the time in the world, because I'm getting on and off the, you know, it's even in her stuff. Hello, sister. It's me, your sister. Guess where we are? We're on safari, you know, but it's on and off really fast. But you understand exactly what you're hearing as the audience member.
How do you sound so beautiful just throwing that away?
Thank you. I don't know. I'll tell you what. My teacher, who's long dead, always said, if you can talk in the morning, you can sing. And I think she's absolutely.
Wow.
I do.
Colleen, you're a marvel. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I really, really enjoyed hearing it. And I know the listeners will too. And
I hope so.
I wish you the best with the rest of the run. If Kimberly, get to see you go on. And I'm happy that we've added your Into the Woods story to the annals.
Me too. My first adored show of Steve's. I love his work so much and loved him too.
We all do.
Yeah.
Thank you. Have a great rest of your day. And I hope I talk to you soon.
Thank you, Ben.
Take care.
Bye. Bye.
Thank you for listening to Giants in the Sky, how Sondheim and Lapine went into the woods on the Broadway Podcast Network. Look out for episode 34 with Joshua Ellis, Broadway press agent.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.